KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
I would say that it's easier to swindle a German investor or a dentist from Palm Springs than it is the internet.
Kickstarter is only 5 years old, and already millions of people have donated more than $1 billion to fund all kinds of projects. That includes movies, but some say Kickstarter can be a place where unsuspecting fans make bad financial decisions. Co-founder Yancey Strickler disagrees. But first on the News Banter, is Tom Cruise still a bankable star? Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my fellow banterer and colleague, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, Matt, we don't know the exact numbers right now, but it certainly looks as we are sitting here that whatever Edge of Tomorrow, the new Tom Cruise movie from Warner Brothers, is going to make at the box office will not nearly be enough, really, to cover a very substantial budget.
Yeah, I mean, with a movie that's in the $175 to $200 million budget range, you've got to get to $650 million just to kind of consider that a profitable movie. And it's very difficult to do that if you don't have that big opening weekend.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of listeners sometimes reach out and say, well, I don't understand the numbers. And the thing to bear in mind is just very roughly, if a movie grosses $500 million, the studio is going to get half of that, and they're spending whatever the budget of the movie is, let's call it $200 million, and they're spending another $100 in a walk, $75, $100 to market the movie. So getting back half of $500 million obviously is not nearly cover the cost of it. And on top of that, these movies are not made just to break even. These are movies that are supposed to be mighty, mighty rivers of revenue that float other problems. And in this case, since this is a Warner Brothers movie, I will mention Blended, the Adam Sandler, Drew Barrymore movie that just completely tanked. A movie like that should be not a big problem if the big movies perform.
Yeah, and when you open a movie like Edge of Tomorrow opposite something like The Fault in Our Stars, which is a very low budget, $10 to $15 million budgeted movie, and it can actually outperform Edge of Tomorrow, that's saying something.
Yeah, this goes back to this question of Tom Cruise. Now, Tom Cruise, you know, he deviated from his public image some years ago. We don't need to rehash all of that, except to note that that's a very risky thing for a movie star. You know, it's when Russell Crowe throws a phone at somebody in a hotel or there's certain kinds of behavior, the public is kind of, they start to not recognize the person that they had imagined this movie star to be. So the question with Cruise has been, you know, can he come back and can he recreate this huge stardom? And, you know, there's never been a more committed star. Tom Cruise loves being a movie star, works at being a movie star, but it hasn't been so easy for him lately.
No, I mean, he's had some success with the Mission Impossible franchise, which really brought him back when he did another one of those films a couple years ago. But outside of the Mission Impossible franchise, he has struggled somewhat. Jack Reacher didn't really connect. The Rock of Ages film, which was an ensemble, but he was kind of the biggest star in it, didn't really work. He did okay last spring with Oblivion, but that was a film that opened outside of the main summer corridor where the most competition is, and it didn't get to that blockbuster status. And here you have another attempt that didn't really turn into the full-fledged blockbuster that people wanted.
Now, this movie, of course, is Warner Brothers' problem. Fox is the one that gets to be very, very happy with The Fault in Our Stars because it looks like it's, you know, it really looks like it's going to be one of those, like, once every 10, 15 years, you know, love story or Romeo and Juliet, the Franco Zeffirelli one, where all the young women, Titanic, they all go and cry their eyes out and have this cathartic experience. That looks like a huge hit. So that's Fox's joy. Warner Brothers' sorrow is Edge of Tomorrow, and they seem to have responded by moving another high-profile movie out of the summer.
They had another big summer movie scheduled in Jupiter Ascending, which is from the Wachowskis that are responsible for The Matrix, starring Channing Tatum, Mila Kunis, that looked like a big $175, $200 million play. All of a sudden, this past week, they moved it to February of 2015, which is never a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, July is where you put something that you think will work. February, not so much. The Wachowskis did not do that well with the last one, Cloud Atlas. And it feels to me like, you know, a sort of a space where they're going to have some fans who love it, but it's not a mass appeal product, but it's got a mass appeal price.
Right. And moving it might give a better shot of a less competitive time period where people could really feel like it's an event, whereas in July, up against all these other summer movies, maybe they won't. So there is a mixed track record of studios moving movies, but in recent years, it's actually not been a disaster like people think it might be.
Yes, as you point out, it's not necessarily the kiss of death, but the premise is you have to be able to fix the movie. You have to be able to do what Paramount did with World War Z, which was a mess, and yet they salvaged it.
Right, and G.I. Joe was also bumped from its summer corridor into a less competitive place, and that film also did well. But for every one of the G.I. Joes, you also have something like 47 Ronin, which was a Keanu Reeves samurai movie that got moved several times, and it didn't matter where they put it, it ultimately flopped.
And I will come back to this issue of fixability. Yes, World War Z was fixed, but at great cost. They had to write and shoot an entire new third act and ending to the movie. They did a great job, they fixed it, but I bet you if you crunch the numbers like we talked about in the beginning, how much did it cost? How much did it cost to fix? How much did it cost to market? You know, they had a big gross on that movie. They're working on a sequel, but I bet you that movie turns out to be not quite a loss leader, but a break even. Now they have a recognizable piece of property, but I don't think Paramount executives were celebrating the great profits that they pulled in from World War Z.
No, but you know what? They now have a franchise, and they have a Brad Pitt action franchise that could conceivably last for 5-10 years if they play this franchise right.
We'll see. Time will tell. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Coming up, the co-founder and CEO of Kickstarter talks Zach Braff, Veronica Mars, and letting the public decide which ideas merit financial support. Just 5 years ago, Perry Chen, Charles Adler, and our guest today, Yancey Strickler, launched the online crowdfunding site Kickstarter. Since then, some 6 million people have donated to more than 63,000 projects. These fall into categories from technology to dance, but film is among the top draws on the site. Projects have 30 days to reach their funding goals, and those who donate are offered enticements ranging from signed scripts to walk-on roles. We've had many filmmakers on this show who have raised money through Kickstarter, and full disclosure, my husband ran a Kickstarter campaign that funded last year. Far more high-profile campaigns were run by Rob Thomas to help finance a Veronica Mars movie, and Zach Braff, who raised more than $3 million for his upcoming film, Wish I Was Here. Our guest today, Kickstarter co-founder and CEO Yancey Strickler, is the public face of Kickstarter. The company is based in New York, but he comes to L.A. often, not to discover unknown talent, but to court the filmmakers who he calls his heroes in the business.
I mean, everyone out here has a passion project, has that thing that everyone knows is unlikely to make anybody a ton of money. And for that reason, it's tough to get off the ground. But some of those projects, I think the public would be really excited about. And for someone who has an established following, or it's like one of those projects that when people hear about it, their ears perk up and they get excited. Those sorts of things, I think, are perfect for Kickstarter.
So just let me ask you a few mechanical questions.
Sure.
You vet what projects make the cut to go on Kickstarter. How do you do that?
There's a few things that happen. One is that there's various algorithms that look at things related to the project and sort of do a scoring based on that. And then there's a human being.
Algorithms,
fancy. And then there's a human.
I mean, like, what do you put data in? Like, this, I'm really bad at this algorithm.
You know,
anything.
At this point have looked at a couple hundred thousand things, and
right.
You've just seen patterns if something is weird. But the primary process is that a human being looks at each project and talks to the creator and make sure the project is ready to go. And basically, there are three core guidelines to Kickstarter: that every project makes something new to share with others, every project is honest and legal, and projects cannot fundraise for charity or offer financial return. And that's it.
So you don't look at it and say, that looks like a terrible project and we're not doing it.
Never.
And when you look at it, do you look at a business plan or a budget and think?
No, you look at the same project page that you would see when you go to Kickstarter. So someone builds their project and then before they launch it, we're like, cool, a person on our staff is going to check it out first. I mean, I don't know many businesses, certainly online, where every person who uses it interacts with a human being. But, you know, of our staff, 15% of them work with project creators.
And then how do you follow up to make sure people are doing what they claimed they were going to do?
I mean, the backers do. You know, every project is a relationship between the creator and their backers. And it's up to the creator to be accountable to their backers and talk about what's going on and to deliver the things that they promised to do. So backers will sometimes notify us of something like, hey, this person hasn't talked in a while. You know, can you find what's up? And we'll drop them an email. But it's up to creators to follow through on the promises that they made.
And is there, there's no real recourse if the thing doesn't gel?
No. I mean, there's various ways that a project could not come together as planned. One could be like, oh my goodness, I thought this movie would be great. Ends up it's terrible, you know, or it could be that someone just got in over their head, things like that. What we find is that when creators are really transparent and just open about it, things go well. When they get scared and like don't want to talk because they feel anxious about it, that's when backers will get upset. But, you know, we've
But again, there's no, if let's just say I'm telling you I'm going to make a film. The film is about my dog, who was great, and I raise money, and then I think, it's a stupid idea.
Well, it depends. I mean, the recourse there is that your name is ruined forever.
Okay, that would be bad, yeah.
I mean, seriously, like a social cost is certainly the biggest barrier of just, you can't raise money on Kickstarter without putting your name out there. You're raising funds based on your reputation, and you're raising it primarily from your fans, your friends, your network.
Worst case scenario, somebody is just a total creep, doesn't really care, totally looking to rip people off, takes the money and runs. The opprobrium of the crowd is going to have to be the punishment, or would you actually consider calling the cops on somebody?
If outright fraud is committed, the legal system would get involved, of course. I mean, a crime is a crime.
Would Kickstarter sue somebody, or has Kickstarter sued anybody?
No.
Or called the cops?
Out of 14 million pledges to date, there has been one lawsuit by one backer against one creator over a $60 reward. 14 million pledges.
And then how do you guys, what is your percentage, or how do you get
If a project is successfully funded, we charge 5% of what they raised as our fee. And if they don't meet their goal, we don't charge anything at all.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking with Yancey Strickler, CEO of the crowdfunding site Kickstarter. In the past year, fundraising campaigns run by connected filmmakers like Scrub stars Zach Braff stirred controversy for Kickstarter. Some critics said Braff is a Hollywood player who could raise money elsewhere. Similarly, there were those who said filmmaker Rob Thomas exploited Veronica Mars fans to make a movie based on the TV series. The project, in success, would benefit Warner Brothers. But Strickler says those campaigns did a lot of good for less known projects, and he can prove it.
The Veronica Mars and Zach Braff projects brought hundreds of thousands of new people to Kickstarter who pledged millions of dollars to other projects. I mean, this is the way that...
Do you know that? I mean, is that quantifiable?
Yeah. We did a blog post, actually, where we broke this down. This is the thing, is that the perspective that Zach Braff or Veronica Mars or Spike Lee are doing something wrong by proposing an idea to the public seems to assume that audiences are sheep and that people will just be led blindly by their nose to give away their money to whatever shiny person appears before them. I disagree. I think that audiences are smart. I think that they are sophisticated. I think they are supporting things that they want to see. And so for the 40,000 people who pledged money to Zach Braff to make Wish I Was Here, they knew full well what they were doing, and they were thrilled by the chance for Zach to make a new movie and to make it the way that he wanted. I think that is a victory. Now, other people might not like that. And you know what's great is that they don't have to back it.
Although, if I draw the analogy to movies, I feel like there's a long, long story in Hollywood of getting a person like Battlefield Earth, John Travolta, and they're, in that case, German investors, naive to the business, thinking, oh, a movie star, this has got to be great. And, you know, the industry has relentlessly taken advantage of people like that. So I don't know whether that wouldn't happen in a way with the projects that you would maybe court from.
Well, I think, you know, the average pledge amount on Kickstarter is $25. So it's not a stiff amount. And I would say that it's easier to swindle a German investor or a dentist from Palm Springs than it is the internet. You know, when you have Reddit and Twitter and all these places looking at projects and really breaking them down and deciding their value and collectively deciding whether something should move forward, I think it's a pretty strong system, not only for vetting, but also allowing for the will of the people to happen.
So you let's start with Veronica Mars, the one that made the big boom, you know, the noise of that one. It's unclear at this point whether that movie is going to be profitable. It didn't do a big number at the box office. The streaming numbers, I don't think are... Do you know?
I have no idea.
Do you care?
No.
It's not your problem.
Well, it's not that it's not my problem. It's that there's a Veronica Mars movie, and that was my goal. And that was the goal of the 91,000 fans that wanted it to happen. Questions of how much money it made, those are Warner Brothers questions. And probably Rob Thomas as well, if he wants to do another Veronica Mars movie.
Well, I think he felt, you know, in the interview with us, he said, we have to stick the landing because otherwise it doesn't become a great example of, you know, a great anecdote about how this works.
Well, what I take from this is that for 7 years, Hollywood told Rob Thomas and Kristen Bell, no, this is a bad idea. No one wants a Veronica Mars movie. And for 7 years, he fought for that opportunity, finally got the chance to put up on Kickstarter, and in 10 hours, the fans said yes. And so 91,000 people can finance a small-scale Hollywood movie.
So it's an artistic issue for you more than... I'm trying to get my... Because if it's not a financial success, it could potentially be a negative in terms of getting other things made, right?
I think that demanding that the human imagination contort to an accountant's idea of a good deal is very limiting. And this is the core conceit behind Kickstarter, is that the only ideas that could find support in the world were ideas that could make someone else money. But many of the most amazing things in the world are things that someone is just inspired to do. They feel passionate about it. The world would be a whole lot better if this existed. And that is the driving impetus behind a lot of art and a lot of creative things. But
I mean, I'm not trying to sort of make you responsible for Veronica Mars, but I do get, you know, tweets or emails from listeners saying, so... What's the takeaway here? Veronica Mars, is it a financial success? Did it work?
Why does that matter?
It matters. I mean, I guess because...
Who does it matter to?
If you're trying to finance a movie, you want to be able to say this worked.
But I think it worked in that there is a Veronica Mars movie that's there for fans to experience.
Right.
And so if you go with me that this notion of just something existing is a victory and that is the end goal. And that whatever happens outside of that is like up to the gods, and we all cross our fingers and hope it works out.
So the business
but the ultimate goal is simply for it to exist.
Make it happen. Right?
And so if the notion is that if 100,000 people want a movie to happen and a director and a cast want the movie to happen and it can happen based solely on the will of those people, I don't view that as a failure. I view that as success. The thing they wanted to happen happened, and there it is for them to enjoy, and it was... an exchange perfectly articulated between a set of about 100,000 people.
So stepping to the next big one in terms of high visibility movie projects, it was obviously Zach Braff.
Mm-hmm.
And we had both Zach, as I said, and Kevin Smith on the show talking about whether people like Zach Braff, who are famous, who have access to money, but hypothetically, should go to Kickstarter. Did you guys feel, why is this even a thing? Or what was your take on that?
I understood why it was a thing for people, why projects from bigger names have raised these questions, but I also fully support the right of anyone to take their work to the public and use them and work with them to help something get made. I don't think that's a privilege that should be reserved for the poor or for the non-famous. I think that there's power in there being a singular tool that everyone uses. So if you imagine a tool where two classes, one for fancy people and one for everyone else, like that's the world we already have. It's Hollywood studios and everyone else scratching and clawing. But if you take a longer term view, the notion of everyone using the same system to work with the public to make something, I think this makes a lot more sense. Now, you know, I think that a lot of the reaction against Zach Braff was from this place of like, how dare he? But, you know, I defend anyone's right to make something and to share an idea with the public. And I think anyone trying to shame someone else for creating something, yeah, it's incredibly cynical.
Coming up after a short break, Strickler talks about some other Kickstarter controversies. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Head over to the KCRW store to shop for vacations, wine classes, frequent flyer miles, dinners, and more, all in support of KCRW. They won't last long. Check it out now at kcrw.com/store.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We've been talking with the co-founder and CEO of Kickstarter, Yancey Strickler. Not every Kickstarter controversy revolves around film. Earlier this year, Oculus Rift, a company that makes a virtual reality headset for playing video games, was acquired by Facebook for $2 billion. Oculus Rift had been funded in part through Kickstarter. So some people questioned whether donors to the project deserved a piece of that Facebook money. And then there's politics. Recently, a documentarian looking to finance a movie about abortion cried censorship when Kickstarter asked him to alter language on his campaign page. He eventually took his project to Indiegogo, a rival crowdfunding site. This Kermit Gosnell movie, this is this terrible abortion, like the worst possible abortion doctor, or so-called doctor ever in prison, I guess, and a film about him, and they are claiming that you wouldn't allow them on Kickstarter and you censored them. And what happened there?
That project was accepted. I mean, my desire is, over the past 5 years, Kickstarter has grown into this enormous creative community where people make restaurants and public parks and movies and video games and art and books and things of all kinds. And it's a place where people can share their ideas, people can come together with them. I do not want to see Kickstarter made a political football.
Right.
And get dragged into the
well,
same things
exactly
that are everywhere.
Well, that's exactly what the effort is. They've quit Kickstarter because they say you laid on a bunch of rules that made it censorship. That was the argument.
Yeah, I don't think that's accurate. I mean, Kickstarter is a place where people share their ideas and bring them to life.
Well,
and
just,
it's not a political battleground. I have no interest in it being a political battleground.
So what about the project was not okay for you?
The project was accepted.
But there were rules. There was obviously a clash over some limitations on how they were to present the project, right?
There were two phrases cited by our team.
Something about stabbing babies to death.
Yes, which, by the way, was removed from the project. They eventually launched somewhere else.
Okay.
That was
and
it.
The other one.
That was it. The other one is very similar.
And then they, I don't want to give them a big forum and talk about it forever, but I do want to ask, is there a political point of view?
No. We're a site for people to make creative things, make art. I mean, it's a friendly, open environment. It's a place where people from all political persuasions come. You know, we have 150,000 creators who've launched projects on Kickstarter. I'm sure we have 150,000 different political viewpoints. And I embrace that. That's fine. I just don't want Kickstarter to be a political battleground. You know, the rest of the world is that.
Can you prevent that kind of stuff? I mean, is there anything you can do? Do you feel like you have to clarify or make some kind of general? I mean, because as you
grow.
We have
had, over the course of 5 years and 150,000 projects, we have had zero issues with this.
Until now.
That is not my doing.
Right. I mean, I'm interested, honestly, because you start a thing and the thing works, and then things begin to happen. And another example, recent one, is the Oculus, which is this virtual reality thing where it sold to Facebook for $2 billion. And then people got upset because they were like, hey, it wasn't supposed to be like, I mean, is this again a thing where what can you possibly do about it?
Yeah, I'm an Oculus Rift backer. I backed it because I thought it seemed really cool and like a truly world-changing technology, and it is. I mean, having gotten to use it is. And yeah, I mean, listen, these creators have done a phenomenal job of making something that is like just hugely revolutionary. They fulfilled all their backers with all the Oculus dev kits that they promised and all those sorts of things. And they're a growing organization out there. And yeah, and then something really crazy happened.
So as a backer of it, you feel like, well,
yeah, I mean, I think this is your thing. Go do it. You know, best of luck to you.
It's like a baby that has to grow up and leave.
Yeah, exactly. Wish you didn't get that tattoo, but
yeah, don't do that. So, at this point, if you just what makes a successful campaign? A good idea, right?
It's not even necessarily a good idea.
An engaging sounding idea.
I think a sincere idea. I think that's something you're excited about doing. That you're willing to tell people about. You should do it with a video. You should do it by offering people a copy of what you're making in return. And then you should tell the story of how it happens. You know, this stuff is not that difficult to do. It takes effort. like all things worth doing. But if there's something that you really want to do, that book you've always wanted to write, that food truck you've always wanted to start, all those sorts of things, and you've never had the time or the money or the opportunity, or you were worried that no one cared, or you wanted that forcing factor of just you tell everyone you're doing it, so then you're obligated to do it, that's where Kickstarter is perfect.
But just hearkening back to the question of Oculus, where you had certain people feeling somewhat betrayed, like now it's a huge business and people got rich. Mm-hmm. What if there was a blockbuster movie? What if Veronica Mars made, you know, $1 billion?
If Veronica Mars is being criticized the other way?
Yeah, exactly.
Because no matter what, you're going to get criticized.
Exactly.
Yeah. Here's the thing, is that there are things like this that occur through Kickstarter almost a weekly or biweekly basis, of a giant internet navel-gazing about what does it mean about
yes,
some huge
that.
Thing that's happened. And
right.
to me, this just shows how enormously this has changed a lot of how we work and a lot of how we think about how things are created and what happens when you pull the process of creation and funding from behind the curtain. Like, these sorts of things have always happened. They've just been hidden from the public. There's been this wall where you're not allowed to see how the sausage gets made. You shouldn't concern yourself with that. But audiences are sophisticated and we care, you know? And so now you're having these huge conversations about really kind of the core nature of what is art? What is creativity? What does it mean to fund it? What does it mean when someone else buys it and owns it?
Well, clarify for me, did I read that, because, you know, one of the issues around Zach Braff's movie is, you know, you're not really investing and you're not really going to get a return if he does make a lot of money on the film.
Right.
So
it's the most transparent deal in the history of business.
Right. I assume you would say that, like, duh, read it. You get a copy of the script, or you get a walk on, or it says what you get. So that's what you get. But would you, or did I read somewhere even that you would create a venue where people could actually get a return on investment?
No, we're not interested.
Offered a percentage of a project?
We're not interested in crowd investing or contorting the system to making it be about people making money. I mean, this is about people making things. And, you know, I have to say, like, the amount of customer service questions we have gotten from people saying, like, hey, where's my cut of this? This looks like a huge hit. I could count on probably one hand. Now, the amount of press that I see from people complaining that someone else got ripped off, that, you know, John Sixpack was duped by this creator because they made a lot of money and this backer didn't make
right.
a lot of money. You see that a lot, lot more.
You feel like that's we more have of a sophisticated, media construction.
Yes, yeah. We have a sophisticated community who understands what this is. And again, this is unbelievably transparent.
So let me ask you about the future a little teeny bit. I've read, at least, that you guys had said you would never sell this company. I assume that, I mean, you make money because of the way, you know, you're taking some money from these projects. So does money not corrupt somehow? I mean,
we've been in the black for 3.5, 4 years, something like that. So we are a sustainable growing business. We decided from the very beginning, the three of us who started it, Charles, Perry, and myself, that we would never go public. We would never sell, that we wanted this to be an independent private company, and that we viewed this as a public trust, and that this is something that should exist so that people can create their things, that people can test out their idea, share it with the world, and that all those other moves would corrupt this and would take it in a direction that would not be best served. And so we take a very long-term view of this. And that's how I view all these things, all these like issues of the day that come up. I'm thinking of, how is the Kickstarter system best served? And I think it's best served by being a huge, welcoming, diverse environment where anyone can come and share an idea. And that's why it exists. And there aren't that many things in the world that exists in that kind of way.
Yancey Strickler is co-founder and CEO of Kickstarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna and Will Bentley. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. While you're there, also be sure to check out KCRW's monthly TV podcast, The Spinoff. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.